from KMXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, Southeast dive fisheries have gotten underway. The city of Pelican is taking over the cannery there, and why the king crab you're eating is named Hannibal. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Southeast Alaska's commercial dive seasons got underway this month for red sea urchins, sea cucumbers, and gooey ducks. The dive fisheries continue to see effects from the region's expanding population of sea otters. Joe Vicnicki reports.
Diving for sea cucumbers opened up Monday, October 3rd. The fishery has openings every week, typically lasting a day and a half. Kyle Hebert, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's herring dive fisheries project leader in Southeast, says the cucumber fishery usually lasts for several weeks.
Usually through October into November, it's 7 or 8 weeks typically before areas are closing. But it depends on the size of the GHL and the effort in each area.
The overall GHL, or guideline harvest level, for the region is just under 1 million pounds. The slow-moving, bottom-feeding sea creatures are shaped like their vegetable namesake, and they're sold in Asian markets. The industry is expecting they'll fetch a higher price at the docks this year. Phil Doherty is executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association.
We anticipate the price being very good this year. We're hopefully the divers are anticipating somewhere around $4.50 a pound. To start the season off with, the last couple years, the price has been between $2.50 and $3.50 a pound. So the market looks really good for sea cucumbers.
Typically about 140 to 150 divers participate in the sea cucumber fishery. Fish and Game is keeping a couple acute areas closed to harvest this year because of a growing population of sea otters eating too many of the creatures in those areas. They include Sea Otter Sound on northwest Prince of Wales Island, along with another area south of Sitka Sound. Fish and Game's Hebert says sea otter predation is a continuing problem for the dive fisheries.
We've seen substantial evidence of sea otter predation during the surveys, particularly out on the outer coast areas, outside of Prince of Wales Island and Sitka Sound area and outer Baranof. So that continues to be a pretty serious threat to the populations of sea urchins and gooey ducks and sea cucumbers, and also the commercial fisheries for those.
Seasons for gooey duck clams and red sea urchins also open up this month. The guideline harvest level for urchins is just under 3.3 million pounds this year. That's down substantially from last year's GHL of around 5 million pounds, due mainly to otter predation. The gonads of the spiky sea creatures are a delicacy in Asian markets, but the Alaskan product in recent years has not been competitive overseas. And as a result, participation in the urchin fishery is down to just a couple divers in the region, and the department does not expect those divers to come close to catching this year's GHL. That's not the case with gooey ducks, a large clam prized in overseas markets. Like cucumbers, gooey ducks may also bring divers a higher price this year. Sardfuzz Doherty thinks the clams could get around $8 a pound, up from the past several years.
Here's what the market in Hong Kong has picked up for gooey ducks. Our product coming out of Southeast Alaska is very well accepted on the market. We have good quality gooey duck clams coming out of Southeast, but the Washington State fisheries this summer, and along with the BC fisheries, was very strong for ex-vessel value, and we're anticipating that carrying over to our season.
The GHL for the region is over 557,000 pounds of gooey duck clams. Fish and Game determines weekly openings of various areas around the region based on results of testing clam samples for paralytic shellfish poisoning conducted by the state's Department of Environmental Conservation. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
The crewmen from the seized vessel suspected of illegal fishing are being deported. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement spokeswoman Virginia Kice says the 22 crew members are being held at a detention facility outside Seattle while arrangements are made to return them to their home countries. She didn't know how long that process would take, though. She says 10 of the crewmen are from Vietnam, 7 from Indonesia, 4 are from China, and 1 is from Taiwan. Coast Guard seized the Bangoon Percasa September 7th, about 2,600 miles southwest of Kodiak, after a report that the ship was fishing illegally with a high seas drift net. Coast Guard spokeswoman said the crew initially claimed the vessel was from Indonesia, but authorities in Indonesia don't claim it.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online anytime at kmxt.org. The city of Pelican is parting ways with Cake Tribal Corporation. The Lisianski Inlet community of 88 people will acquire Cake Tribal's assets in town, which include a fuel dock and Pelican's electric utility. The city will also take control of the massive fish plant, which has been closed for years. The city foreclosed on it in 2010. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Pelican's mayor says under the deal reached with Cake Tribal Corporation, his city will pay $400,000 to acquire the fuel dock and the electric utility located in Pelican. It also will forgive the $71,000 redemption fee on the cold storage, which the city had foreclosed upon. City leadership says the hope in Pelican is that municipal ownership will prevent money from flowing out of the community.
This is as big as it gets for Pelican.
Clint Bean is Pelican's mayor. He says the deal isn't done yet. Both parties have signed off on it, but there are still regulatory hurdles to clear with the state.
Well, I think when it's done, it means that the city pretty much holds its future in its own hands.
And that, Bean says, is what his citizens have been hoping for, a chance to let the economy recover from the body blows it's received in recent years. The closure of the fish plant and cold storage took scores of jobs away from the community. The flume that brings water down to Pelican's hydro generator broke, and energy prices skyrocketed. In 1990, more than 200 people lived in Pelican. At the last census, the number was 88.
We can only improve from here, and that's the goal, is to get everything centralized, get everything on track, and strengthen our economy, and invite people, and get more visitors, and move forward. And I think this is the first of many steps in that moving forward.
The fish plant and cold storage will have a long way to go before becoming functional again. Its future is at least partly in the hands of the larger fishing economy. But the city received a grant for an ice machine that it hopes will bring some boats back. Pelican residents are still using diesel fuel instead of hydro for their electricity, but repairs continue on the flume and the utility's infrastructure. Once those are complete, officials hope energy prices will drop below the current level of 50 or 60 cents per kilowatt hour. Bean says the fuel dock, meanwhile, is Pelican's one stop for petroleum products.
Boat fuel, stove oil, and gasoline. And then you throw in propane, so pretty much anything and everything we use out here.
The city will buy the current fuel at inventory prices, not at the markup charged to customers, and will then be able to sell fuel citywide. It's a stream of income that Bean says is now flowing back into Pelican.
Any monies that were leaving the city are going to stay in the city, and thereby strengthening the local economy and enabling us to rebuild, reconstruct, and strengthen our infrastructure.
Cake Tribal Corporation did not return interview requests sent by phone and email in time for this story's deadline. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Researchers at the NOAA Fisheries Science Center in Kodiak have been studying cannibalism among red king crabs. It turns out they're all little Hannibal Lecters, which could be a problem for hatchery-raised crab. The Science Center is participating in research to determine if it's possible to rear crab in hatcheries and use them to resurrect depleted stocks around Kodiak Island and other areas. The research is described in the current monthly update from the Alaska King Crab Research, Rehabilitation, and Biology Program. During the last two summers, Jessica Pop and Lauren Whitefield-Smith conducted experiments to reveal how predator size affects predation at different prey densities and in different habitats. The research was overseen by Chris Long and Kathy Sweeney. The complexity of the habitat the crab were released in played a role in young crab survival, with greater cannibalism in more open areas and less in more complex ones. Predation by two-year-olds on new crab was greater than that by one-year-olds. The results suggest that hatchling crab releases should be in habitats with complex structures at low densities of fewer than 30 crab per square meter. Also, stocking in alternate years in any given area may minimize cannibalism among year classes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Search and rescue team from Mangoon rescued a Sitka crabber whose boat rolled over and sank in Chatham Strait on Thursday last week. 59-year-old Peter Roddy was aboard his 42-foot crabber, the Jaeger, when its bow dipped, followed by the stern. First Sergeant Charlie Hartzell is the village public safety officer in Angoon. He says Roddy had to act quickly.
Mr. Roddy stated that he had approximately 10 seconds to release and get into his life raft. After Mr. Roddy said after that he got into his life raft, the vessel actually rolled to its side and eventually sunk.
From his life raft, Roddy released smoke, which was spotted by a passing aircraft. The call for help came into Angoon around 11:50 a.m.
Angoon Search and Rescue was in the vicinity with our rescue craft. Mr. Roddy was transferred to Angoon Search and Rescue en route to Angoon, at which time he was taken to the Angoon Search Clinic and released with clean bill of health.
Hartzell says visibility at the time of the rescue was good with seas of 2 feet. The National Weather Service office in Juneau reports winds at 10 to 15 knots in the area at the time of the incident. An oil sheen approximately 1,500 yards by 100 yards was visible just after the sinking. Two of Alaska's most important fishing towns may be sharing a newspaper soon. It's been about 2 months since the residents of Bristol Bay and Dutch Harbor have seen an issue of their community newspapers. The new owner said the papers would be out by now, but they have pushed back the publication dates and announced that they will combine the Bristol Bay Times and the Dutch Harbor Fisherman into one. KDLG's Daisha Eaton explains.
Jason Evans, who bought the Bristol Bay Times and the Dutch Harbor Fisherman this summer, says he's combining the papers for two reasons. It was done before, and both Bristol Bay and Dutch Harbor are fishing communities.
Well, one, it was done historically, so there was a combined paper. And I know the preference is probably to have one paper for each region, although they're very different. There's a lot of commonalities between the fishing community.
The papers were published as one newspaper about 15 years ago. The new owners, Evans and his wife, stopped publishing the Bristol Bay Times and the Dutch Harbor Fisherman during the transition. Evans bought the papers along with the Arctic Sounder on August 5th after Chilista Corporation liquidated their weekly newspaper chain, Alaska Newspapers Incorporated. Several editions of the Arctic Sounder have already come out, but the Bristol Bay Times and the Dutch Harbor Fisherman have been slower to come together. And the transition, Evans explains, has been more difficult than he anticipated.
When ANI decided to just shut their doors and not necessarily work with anyone on a transition, it became very difficult for all of the new owners to get staffed and get their own office and office procedures set up to produce these papers and make sure that they reach out to customers and correctly bill them and all the things it takes to run a newspaper.
Evans says he's in the process of hiring two reporters for the combined paper.
Our plan is that we would have a person dedicated to kind of each region we serve. We'd want someone that understands rural Alaska and then, you know, good writing and good connections to the community if possible.
Evans says the combined version of the Bristol Bay Dutch Harbor paper is expected to be out by the end of October. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the Pebble Partnership, listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KFSK's Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg, KCAW's Ed Ronco in Sitka, and KDLG's Daisha Eaton in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.